Our podcast will begin in just a moment. Our podcast production and distribution made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. 7 things to know about 529 plans. How to keep more of your ETF gains. The plus side of working longer. The right and wrong of annuities. These are talking points from recent Invest Talks. You can hear them again or for the first time on InvestTalk.com. Hear a complete replay. Just click on the Invest Talk tab on InvestTalk.com. And now, today's Invest Talk.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Monday edition of Invest Talk. And, of course, it's all about above-average investing for the average investor. That's what we try to teach here. Having the ability to cope with stress and emotions and managing your portfolio can almost be as important as selecting the right stocks. Not admitting to faults, leaving your money invested, losing positions. I love to hear those people that say, well, I'll wait till I get even, and then I'll get out. That makes no sense if you think about it. There's a saying my old partner used to say, if you wouldn't buy it today, why would you own it today? So if you wouldn't buy it right now, why would you own it? Because it's the same thing. You own the stock. You have money in it. You put money in it. If you put it in today, why, you know, if you say, I wouldn't buy it today, but I'll keep it, that makes no sense, really. So you really got to cope with bad trades. If you're going to make decisions in the marketplace, you're going to make a bad trade. You got to admit to the mistake and deal with it. Now, if you've been to my conferences or read my newsletters, you would know that one way that we deal with making mistakes is never make too big of mistakes. Don't buy more than maybe 5% of any one stock. Our average is about 3% of any one stock. And that will limit the company's specific risk that you're taking in your portfolio. And no matter how good it is, you're still taking a risk in that company. So many of the investors get on the wrong side of the market. The market goes up and they short it, or the market goes down and they go on the wrong side. That's not uncommon, okay? And that's one of the reasons why buy and hold is a popular and profitable way to do it if you buy and hold for years and years, because it takes away getting on the wrong side of the market. When you're trying to short or go long, go short, go long, that means going opposite direction of the market. You know, it's very difficult to do that. Very, very difficult to do that. So don't try to do it. Don't try to time the market. It never works. Statistically, over and over and over, it's been proven that shorting the market does not work. Now, it does work as a hedge. In other words, you could be long the market, but you want to protect the downside for a certain amount of your portfolio. There's nothing wrong with that. But that means that what shorting the market means, or trying to be a timer, means you go one way or the other. And you switch back and forth. That does not work. And don't succumb to peer pressure. Studies show that men in the company of other men take more risks. And I can see that. Macho. So don't do that. And, you know, invest like a girl. And we talked about this before on air. You know, I've told you, and there's been studies to show that women do better than men in investing because they're more patient. They usually take less risks. They usually take a longer time horizon. They just sit and wait it out, and that works over time. So that is a very good way to invest. Now, I know you have many questions, so let's see if I can help you answer some of them. You can reach me right now on our 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART. You can do it anytime you want. It's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So let's answer a question right now.
Hey, guys. It's Josh from South Carolina. I have a real estate question for either one of you. Me and my family, we currently own a home. We're making our payments monthly, but me and my wife are considering saving up money to purchase land to build a home in the future, looking probably maybe a 10-year time horizon, and I'm trying to figure out what's better. Do I want to concentrate on paying off my current home or concentrate on putting most of the money back, saving to allocate towards land in the future? Any insights you guys could give would be great, and love your show and look forward to hearing your answer. Thank you.
So your real question is, what is the best use of my money? This is my goal, and that's buying property in the future and build a house. That's my goal. So what's the best use of my money? Now, if it's 10 years down the road, you throw in that little wrinkle and you could say, okay, what is the, can I make more than my current mortgage interest rate? My current mortgage interest rate is 4%. Can I make more than 4%? If the answer is no, I would tend to tell you to pay down your mortgage. Remember, the house that you're in is also an investment. You're going to be able to sell it at some point. Now, I don't know how the real estate market is where you are. Maybe it over long periods of time, it doesn't go up. I don't know. It depends on where you are. So you have to make that determination, because it is an investment. If you pull down the mortgage, then you don't have to pay less of interest, and you can have more when you sell the house to put down in the new property. But also, the stock market long term has a return of, you know, an 8 to 10%. And why should that be any different over the next 10 years? Now, it's a difficult question, because what about if you have 5 years left? Now what? Does that still apply? You know, that the stock market has a better long-term, well, any 5 years, not necessarily so. So it's a tough, tough question. If it was me, I would probably pay down the mortgage, because there's no place you could put the money in a fairly safe investment, because you want to save money for the new property down the road. You'd have to take risk within the stock market. Well, paying down your mortgage and therefore paying less in interest, there is no risk in that, unless you think your property value is going to collapse, and I doubt that that's going to happen. So those are the factors you need to consider. I'd probably pay down the mortgage. Now, let's also try to answer one of the questions sent to us by text, okay? Hello, this is Jasper from Muncie. This is Jasper from Muncie, Indiana. I'm a college student, new to investing. I've heard you say it is not the price of a stock that determines the value. However, I was wondering if you knew of any stocks under $20 that were worth buying into for the short term. I don't want to hold any longer than 6 months. I don't know why not. Maybe it has something else to do with the money. The answer is, we can't answer that question. We can't, like, tell you, okay, here's a list of stocks under $20 that you should buy. The SEC won't let us do that. We manage other people's money. You can call somebody like Cramer that doesn't manage anybody's money, and they'll give you a list. Sure. I can't do that. I can't give you a list of stocks under $20 or any other list of stocks. I have trouble with that. I do have a list of ETFs that are dividend producing that I can share and send to people who ask for it. But you notice I don't have just, here's a list of these and that kinds of stocks and those stocks, and because the rule is I can't recommend stocks to somebody I don't know. And of course, I don't know anybody over the radio. It's just everybody. So it's hard to, I can't do it. But, you know, there's really no reason to look for stocks under $20. I mean, I know why you want to do it. You don't have a lot of money probably to invest, but that's not how you look for stocks. That's not how you invest money. It won't work. We're glad you're with us today for Invest Talk. As an Invest Talk insider, you have access to investment resources that could easily benefit you. It really is. Short list of ETFs that hold a broad mix of dividend-paying stocks and other equities that pay dividend, steady dividends. It's yours free with your insider membership, which gives you access to recorded webinars. Anybody can sign up. It's free. Just go to investtalk.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Let's go to Thane in Antioch. Hi, Thane. How you doing?
Good. I had a general question for you.
Sure.
My mom has entrusted me with $50,000. Her net worth is probably about $200,000.
Okay.
But she wants me to do some conservative, you know, so I was thinking some dividend-paying stocks, mm-hmm. and, you know, she wouldn't mind if that $50,000 dropped to $45,000 or something, but if it dropped much more, she'd probably start getting a little bit nervous on me.
Okay. Conservative. You really shouldn't use the word conservative and individual stocks in the same sentence.
Okay.
You know, now, there are less risky stocks than risky stocks. I will give you that. But the word conservative probably is a wrong term. Let's talk about what would be good for your mom. I would suggest large dividend-paying stocks, like you have just suggested. Stocks that we know do not go down too much, don't go too up too much. They're kind of staying the same. If you do me a favor, make sure you get about 10 or 15 different stocks.
Okay.
Of this nature.
Or is that against the rules?
Yeah, you know that 3% rule. Thane, if you give me a call in the office tomorrow, I'll be happy to give you some names.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind helping people where I can help them. But I can't give names out over the air and just do these. It just, if you ask me a question about a stock, I'll be happy to answer it.
The couple I was thinking was maybe GE and Merck and Pfizer.
Those are all well-known, big companies. But these stocks can be volatile, though. Don't think they can't.
Yeah.
These are big, solid companies. They're not going away, but they will move around on you. Thanks, Thane. Appreciate the call.
Annuities, asset allocation, reading stock market trends, building a truly balanced portfolio. If it's important to you and you want to know more about it, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART.
How you doing, Manuel?
I love you guys' show. I've been listening for about 3 months, and I learned a lot of good stuff. My question for you today was, the company I work for matches us in our 401k with their own stock, and they're telling me that the stock's going to split. You know, I know then you end up with twice as many shares, but why does it split is my question.
Okay, good question, Manuel. I bet you there's a lot of people out there that want to know why it does that. Why does a company split? Do you know if it's going to split 2-for-1?
I'm not sure. Somebody, one of the other guys that's always paying attention to the 401k a lot more than I do will tell me that today.
Well, just to let you know that a most common split is 2 stocks for 1, but they don't do that all the time. Sometimes it's 3-for-2 or 5-for-3. You're looking to do different ones.
Uh-huh.
But most common is 2-for-1, so we'll try to stick with that. So what's happening is you had one share before at, let's say it was $50 a share. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to have 2 shares at $25 a share. So you didn't really increase the value of your holdings at all. Splits do not increase the value of anything. Mm-hmm. They just give you more shares. Now, why would they do that? One of the main reasons they do that, Manuel, is to lower the price of the stock to make it more attractive for more people to buy. Think about this. What if the stock price was $1,500 per share? How many people would be able to buy 100 shares or 50 shares?
Not too many.
That's right. So they keep splitting. Microsoft did this all throughout all its history when it first started. Split 2-for-1. So did Qualcomm. Qualcomm, which is a huge San Diego stock.
Actually, I owned Qualcomm before it split.
You can see if it never split, the price would be so high that not too many people would buy it. The most common reason, Manuel, is that they wanted to lower the price to be more attractive to more people. The second reason they do it is to get more liquidity. In other words, if they split it 2-for-1, they have twice as many shares out there to trade. It's more liquid, more people can buy and sell. Same, it's related to the first reason, but that's the only reason why they split the shares.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Well, that answered my question. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening, Manuel. Appreciate the call. You're listening to Invest Talk, everybody. Okay, are we man enough to admit we can learn a lesson from the girls? Overconfidence is a really costly fault in investing. And female investors tend to suffer from overconfidence less than males investors do. Kind of like that. So let's talk about it. Men, no such thing as dumb question. 888-99-CHART.
Here's another benefit when you sign up for our InvestTalk Insider program, a brief list of real estate investment trusts, REITs, that should be on investors' radar if they're looking for exposure to this dividend-focused sector. You can sign up for this free InvestTalk Insider program on investtalk.com. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. It's in this long-running bull market we've had, only about half the Americans are actually invested in the stock market. And that matches the lowest ownership rate in about 20 years, by the way. So what's holding investors back? That's going to be one of our talking points by the end of the show. I'm hoping I get to that today. Also, did you know MSCI, which is the widely followed global index provider, MSCI, they continue to exclude China in any of their indexes. And they really want to get into their emerging market index, and they're not in there. I'm going to talk about that. And several data points of American finances. There's several data points I want to share with you. They kind of are surprising, at least interesting. And what do retirees actually do after they retire? There was a survey asking, what are you doing? And I got some things, percentages of what they're doing. It was really interesting. I always like to pick up these interesting facts to share with you if I can. We had several of them out today. So that's what we're going to discuss. Let's go to Eric in San Mateo. How you doing, Eric?
Hi, Steve. Love you. Love your show.
Thanks.
I had a question about Northrop Grumman. So I work at Northrop Grumman. They never had really a stock option. So in the 401k, they were able to elect for a Northrop Grumman fund. So okay. I've been contributing about 10% every year. And it's actually grown to about 30% of my 401k. I wanted to know whether or not I should lower my holdings on it just to distribute it more to something else.
The answer would be yes.
What's your thoughts on Northrop Grumman?
Northrop Grumman is a very good company, Eric. There's nothing wrong with the company. Nothing wrong with owning stock in your own company. That's actually good. But 30% is far too much. So you're going to want to diversify. You just never know. What if all of a sudden a big contract that they thought they were going to get gets lost? Or if all of a sudden there's big problems with one of their military pieces of equipment that means they have to recall all of them. You just never know. No one really knows. So it's never wise to be 30% in any company, no matter how good it is. So I would suggest, yeah, you cut it back. Cut it back to... I wouldn't suggest carrying more than 10% of the stock of your overall portfolio. I wouldn't. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate the call.
Do you have questions about FDIC security, mortgages, money market funds, losses to your retirement plans? Give us a call today, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. You can get a hold of us right now. We're going to go to Maria in San Francisco. Hi, Maria.
Oh, hi, Steve. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, you making it makes the show.
No, you really have a wonderful show. Okay, question about your international fund.
Yes.
I always wanted to buy some international ETF.
Okay.
I always could not get in because, okay, for example, I'm looking at Indian, I'm looking at Mexico, I'm looking at Australia, okay?
Okay.
Those funds, you see price moving up and move down, okay? Sometimes you could bought at the resistance or, you know, you could sell at the, you bought at the...
support.
Right, the floor, and then you sell at resistance.
Correct.
But you just don't know what people are selling or buying for... America, we can see we can hear our news, we can see what is the economy going on. But for international, especially for individual investors, how can you track all the news?
It's very difficult, Marie.
So,
you hit it right on the head as far as the difficulty.
Right, there is no price target. there are some, like a 10 largest holding, just say Indian, okay?
Yes.
You could see the top one or two stocks. There could be some kind of a price target. But other than that, that's just like a 5%. So how can you figure out when to get in and when to get out? And they are very volatile.
They are very volatile.
So what do I do?
Okay. Very, very good question, Maria. Very good question. Because they can get very volatile. And if you buy a foreign stock and you want to sell it, you got the foreign exchange rate to deal with. In other words, you may have gone up in their stock exchange, that stock may have gone up. But by the time you transferred into your money here, our dollar may have gone down or gone up. It changes the whole, so it gets even more complex than Maria's talking about. Now, are you familiar with ADRs, Maria?
Yes.
Okay, there are American depository receipts that are stocks that are foreign but traded here in the United States. And I won't go into all the details how that works, but what it means, if a stock that is foreign that wants to trade on our exchanges here, they have to comply with the general accounting principles that we, our own country, our own companies have to comply with. And so what that does is it gives you more transparency to see what they're doing. Okay? They still can lie and cheat and everything else, though. But so can our own companies. As we know, they do that, too. So, unfortunately. But American depository receipts is a good way to invest in foreign companies, because then you can start putting on the same kind of growth and GP and earnings yield requirements you have. But again, you're right, Maria. When you're investing in a foreign country, how do you know if that country is not doing something crazy like Russia when they took over that oil company, Yukos? Something crazy that would never happen in our country. You never know. So there's an inherent built-in risk investing in foreign companies, and that's why it's a good idea to find a good mutual fund who does it for a living. You know, you can buy, if you have you want 10% foreign exposure in your portfolio, it's almost better to buy a mutual fund that specializes.
Great.
You know, because then you allegedly, quote unquote, are hired an expert to invest in those foreign companies.
Very good idea.
Where do you go for money answers? Give us a call, 888-99-CHART.
We thank you for subscribing. Join our InvestTalk insiders and gain access to a whole range of special reports and one-page info sheets on important money topics like managing a bond portfolio. Fixed income offers a lot of value points that equities do not. Read all about it. Become an InvestTalk insider on investtalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab.
You're listening to an encore presentation of InvestTalk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART is our number, everybody. You can reach us. We have lines open, 888-992-4278. Wilma in Whittier. How you doing, Wilma? Thank you for calling.
I have a question.
Sure.
I've asked so many people, but I don't know what to do.
Okay.
I'm 61. I've been a widow for about 11 years.
I'm sorry.
And my husband, thanks. And my husband had left his 401k. He used to work for Xerox.
Yes.
And I have about $240,000 at Dean Witter.
Okay.
Next year, I want to retire.
Okay.
And I've lived in an apartment all my life, but I want to buy me a little condo because the rent keeps going up and up and up.
Right.
And I was wondering, is it wise to ask for $50,000 or $60,000 at one point and then invest it and get me a little place?
How old are you, 61?
61.
And you want to retire at 62?
Yes.
Do you have any other assets?
Well, no, just what I get is Social Security next year and my retirement from work.
Could I ask about how much that is a month?
Well, it would probably come to $1,700.
I'm a little concerned of spending too much money. Whatever you buy, mm-hmm. you shouldn't use more than 30 or 40% of that $1,700 on a monthly mortgage. In retirement, you really should not have a mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends on how much. You have $240,000 nest egg, mm-hmm. and you're going to get $1,700. I don't want to use all that $240,000. I really shouldn't. You mm-hmm. shouldn't. You're going to need some emergency money.
Yeah.
Therefore, whatever you buy, at the very least, you should not be using all your retirement monthly payment to pay for that mortgage. It should be less than half, because you want to have some freedom. You're going to get an opportunity to buy some things at very good discounts here the next year or two, but it's going to be tough for you to purchase something that's going to give you enough freedom on a monthly basis to have enough money.
Could I take out more money then?
Than
$50,000?
Yeah. Well, what you need to do is figure out how much you're going to pay for the place and how much is your mortgage going to be.
Yeah.
And include taxes, property tax in there.
Yeah.
And then remember, there also is that monthly association fees. And then there's the heating, electrical, all those other things.
Exactly.
So you got to figure out all that cost and then determine it.
Okay, so it'd be better if I get me another apartment.
At this stage, I would say the chances are very good, depending on how much you're going to pay for that condo, yes.
Yeah.
Property values are still going to come down, by the way, so don't get it be in a big rush.
Yeah, no, like I said, I have another year, so.
Yeah, okay. And well, I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Good luck.
Helps me a lot. Thank you.
Okay, good luck. Bill in San Francisco. How you doing, Bill?
I've heard you talk about annuities. I ran across a new one, which I've never heard of before. I'm sure you're familiar with it, but I'm not. So I'd like to get your pros and cons on it, please.
Okay.
That's what equity index annuity.
Think about what they're doing. An equity index annuity, everybody, is an annuity. An annuity. It's an insurance product in which they take your money that you invest, and they invest it in an index. Now, they usually tell you which index. It will be the S&P 500, or did they specify?
Yeah, there's different ones. I think one they use as an example is S&P 500.
Yeah, that's one of the most popular ones. Okay, so what they do is they take the money, and they give you an equity index annuity, and they also guarantee a return, usually 3 to 5%. I don't know what this one did, Bill, but they usually do guarantee a return. The problem you have with this is that annuities charge anywhere from 2 to 3% annual costs. What are they doing with that annuity? They're buying an index with it. They know that the index over a long period of time, and remember, they're tying you up in an annuity for 7 years or 10 years, depending on the length of the annuity. So they know over that period of time, the index will return approximately 10% annually. So they know, because they're smart people, their odds are with them. The probabilities are with them that they'll get 10% in return. So they guarantee you 3% without too much trouble. And then they can charge high fees for holding the annuity for you. So they make lots of money on the fees, therefore reducing your ultimate gain because you've got to pay the fees out of the return you're getting. It's a very good deal for the insurance company. They love these.
Well, the way they pitched it to me was that if you make money, they take a piece of the action and you get money. But if the index goes down, you don't lose from that. They then index you down the next year at the lower rate, but you still have the same amount of money as before.
That's right. Then this one is promising you. Remember, I told you they always promise you a return. This one is just promising you'll never go down.
Right.
That's not as good as others I've heard. Others I've heard, they promise you at least a small return every year. Don't think this is something great for you. It's not.
Do they still have the mortality rates and the all the other fees in there?
Not usually. Again, these are very complex insurance contracts. They're hard to understand. Trust me, I've read them. I used to be in the insurance business. They're very difficult. I'll tell you this. In general, the person who's making the most money is the insurance company. I don't want to say that you won't do well. You can do well, but you can do better if you take the same amount of money and put it in an equity index yourself, and then take some of that money and maybe buy a CD with it and spread the risk around or something, and you'll do better. They just give you that comfort of knowing they guarantee that you will never lose. Everybody loves that word, guarantee. Good luck, Bill.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium newsletter. It comes out each Friday, and one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Albert in San Mateo. How you doing, Albert?
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I had a question. I want to put some money away for my child's college education, and I'm looking at the 529 plan. Mm-hmm. I just want to know if that's the best way of doing it. She's really young.
How much money do you plan on putting away a year, Albert?
Ooh, that's not really set. It's going to be like $500 maybe right now.
Then I would not suggest a 529 plan. there's two kinds of educational plans that you can do. You can do a 529 plan, which are state-sponsored plans for college only, okay? Accredited college only, not college for hair cutting or truck driver school, okay? A regular accredited college. And there's also what's called the Coverdell. And the reason why I asked how much money you wanted to put away, in a 529 plan, you could put up to like, I think it's like $15,000 a year. In a Coverdell, you can put up to $2,000 a year.
All right.
Now, why would I want Coverdell over 529? Well, because there's different rules on these things. In a 529 program, they're sponsored by individual states. And were you planning on buying a California one? Because if you're in California, you can buy any one in any state you want.
Right.
Okay, you can buy Illinois, Florida, California. But what happens in most 529 plans, besides the fact that you can only spend the money on accredited colleges, you also have restrictions of what you can invest it in.
Right.
In a Coverdell, it's like an IRA, okay? You can start a Coverdell, and you can invest it in anything you want. And Coverdell, you can use it for that beauty school or truck driver school. You can use it for private high school.
Okay.
So, but you can't do it with a 529 plan. That's only for college.
I know Fidelity is the one for California 529. How would I go about getting a Coverdell?
Okay, you can go to anybody, Schwab, E-Trade, anybody. Anybody and say, I want to open up a Coverdell. They'll say, okay, here's the forms.
Okay.
Yeah, same thing. It's really simple. And then what you do is you start putting money in it, and then you decide what you want to invest. So go to any place you want. You can go to a bank. I would suggest, you know, a discount broker. You can buy mutual funds. If you're going to buy mutual funds, Schwab is have a program called Schwab One, which I like. It's a very good vehicle. But you can buy ETFs from anybody, and I like those even better.
Does it have the same tax implications?
Exactly the same.
Great.
Thanks, Albert. Appreciate the call. Good question. Very good question. Time for InvestTalk 101. ESPP. ESPP. No, it's not another sports network. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about employee stock purchase plans. Employee stock purchase plans. We just talked about one of them just a minute ago on Northrop Grumman, I think it was. They can be very beneficial, but you want to be careful. No matter what, you still don't want any one stock to be too dominant of your overall portfolio. It's too risky. And even if you get to buy them at discount, like 15% discount, which is not uncommon, you get to buy the stock at a 15% discount, you still don't want to put too much of that stock in your portfolio. Everywhere you see, anything you read, you will discover that anybody, no one holds that much of anyone's stock. You know who do this? It's hedge funds will do it sometimes. And that's why hedge funds either make a lot of money or they go out of business. Because they can be right, then right quite often, but it doesn't take much. If they're wrong once, it kills them. So that's why, you know, that it's just too risky. Never have more than 10% of your own company's stock and try to keep it under 5%. You know, that's more normal type of leverage, you know, that asset that you should have in your overall portfolio. That's InvestTalk 101. We're here for you if you have any questions, even about ESPP plans. Let's hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
If you have a question on our talking point today, there's a link to a related article on the website homepage, or you can get a note to Steve and he'll respond. To do that, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve.
Okay, let's go to Elias in San Ramon. How you doing, Elias?
Good, thank you. The reason I'm calling is my dad's 60, and he's going to be retiring in the beginning of next year, and his job offered him the choice of directing a portion or all of his pension plan dollars to Fidelity.
Uh-huh.
I guess it's kind of a two-part question. One, is this a good idea? And two, what formula do you guys use to figure out how you want to allocate it with stocks and bonds? I know there's something to do with your age. And then,
yeah. Is the other side of the coin, is he to take it in a lump sum?
No, the other one is I think it just stays within the pension plan.
What company works for?
Northern California electrical workers.
Okay. The reason why I asked, Elias, because if he worked for an airline company, I would say, get out of that.
That's a good idea.
You know, a lot of pensions are underfunded. This is my big, big concern. The question here is, should he take the amount of money that he gets in his pension and put it over into Fidelity, in which he would have control and pick and choose his own investments, or stay in the pension plan in which they pay him a certain amount of money every month until he dies, I'm assuming. Is he married?
Yes.
I apologize for asking questions, which you may not know the answers. But if he dies and he's collecting a pension, does his wife get the full pension benefits?
Yes.
Because you can see how that will impact my answer. The men usually die before the women.
Right.
You know, and you want the wife or your mom to get full benefits if she can. Now what you need to do is figure out how long he's going to live. You figure it's going to be until he's about 77 years old.
Uh-huh.
That's what normally people live to. Maybe a little longer if he's already 60.
Right.
How many years that is, how much money he gets per month, and then figure out that lump sum, okay?
Okay.
Then take the lump sum they're going to flip over to Fidelity and then compound it by about 6 or 7% per year. And always, every year, withdraw the same amount of money that he's going to need, or how much he would take out of the pension. So when you compound it, but take money out, it's a fairer comparison, you know. Generally speaking, it's better to take the money.
The whole lump sum?
The whole lump sum, generally speaking. I can't say for sure. Yeah. I don't know what his benefits are. But the few that I've done the math on, the ones that come and talk to me about this, I do the math. And it seems like invariably they could do better if they just invest in a smart investments. Now, the other part of the question you have is supposed to be for every year of your age is about the approximate amount you have in bonds.
Okay.
So if you're 60, 60% in bonds, 40% in stocks.
Okay.
But the caveat is that you shouldn't really be buying bonds in a rising interest rate environment.
Right.
Or you buy short-term bonds in a rising interest rate environment.
Okay.
It depends how conservative he wants to be. And at age 60, and this is his pension, he needs to be somewhat conservative.
Conservative, yeah.
Elias, I hope that helps. And if you have any specific questions, you can give me a call at the office. I'll run through all the numbers for you.
Oh, this is great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Elias. Appreciate the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Why isn't the MSCI, which is a widely followed global index provider, why aren't they allowing China's A-shares in their emerging market benchmark index, which they would love to be in? Well, they said why. Remember, these are China's A-shares. These are stocks traded on their exchanges. They're meaning China's exchanges, not stocks traded on our exchanges. Theirs, the A-shares, their primary companies. And they had just a couple of words to say why they wouldn't. One is a lack of openness and a lack of transparency. Meaning, you can't believe anything they say about those companies because you don't know if it's true or not. And of course, they're going to tell you all the good stuff. They'll never tell you the bad stuff. We have that problem with our own companies, which are required to be transparent and open. And they still can hide stuff. So what happens if you're in a country where it's not against the rules not to hide it? You can hide it if you want to. So that's why they won't allow them in the index. Now, think about that, and think about you as an investor. Here you are buying Chinese stocks here in the U.S. called ADRs, and knowing full well that they can legally hide whatever they can be lack of transparency in their own country. Now, when they come here, they're supposedly to be transparent. They're supposedly to follow our general accounting principles. So when a Chinese stock trades as an ADR on our exchanges, there's supposed to be transparency and openness. Okay, well, you can take that for what it's worth. They're supposed to be. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley. If you still have a question, we still have time. 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Jack in Concord, how you doing, Jack?
I'm doing good, and you?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
I have a question. I'm seeing my financial advisor in about a week. Now, I've been seeing this guy for several years. He doesn't charge. And what he does is he advises, hoping that when you do retire, you'll invest your money with him, and he'll manage your retirement account.
Yes.
So I'm you know, one of the things, I'm getting pretty close to retirement now, and one of the things that kind of struck me, been listening to you, is what sort of questions should I be asking this fellow around how he manages the money, or what sort of investments does he invest in to get a sense of whether or not it's a good deal?
Very good question, Jack. Appreciate that. Well, besides asking for 1, 3, and 5 year performance, because you need to ask that, what's your performance? And then you compare that performance with the overall market. At the very least, he needs to be matching the market. He actually should outperform if he's going to get paid. And that's net after his fees. So you'll want to see those numbers. He should be able to talk to him. Then what you want to do is say, well, if he's putting in stocks, you want to see what his stock picks are. And then take a list of them with you and then see how they've done in the last 1, 3 years. Okay?
All right.
And then you want to ask him like questions like, what kind of risk does he take? How much money, percentage-wise, of my portfolio would you buy in any one stock? If he says he'll buy 10, 15, 20%, he's a very high-risk player.
Very okay. High.
It should be 3%, around 3%. It could be 4, it could be 5, it could be 2, but around 3%. And you might want to ask him, well, what does he think of the international market? If he's not too keen on international market, that tells me that he's not looking at the future. He's not looking
all
forward.
Right.
Just ask the question, what do you think about the rest of the world, the international market? Will we be taking advantage of that? Do you take advantage of that? How do you do it? Ask those kinds of questions.
Oh, great.
And if you want more detailed information, Jack, you can email me at investtalk.com, and I'll give you a list of questions you should ask. And these are the questions that people should ask me.
All right, I appreciate it.
Okay, Jack, appreciate the call.
All right, thanks a lot.
Good luck. I'd love to manage your money, too, so, you know, I'll answer the same questions. Jack, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. How about some revealing data points on Americans, on an average American's finances? For instance, did you know that 46% of the people, there was a survey, 46% of the families or people, head of households, says they could not afford a $400 emergency bill. They don't have the money. They'd have to sell something or borrow the money. They don't have money, emergency money, to pay a $400 bill that was unexpected. $400? They don't even have $400. What is that? That's 46% of the people. 31% have no retirement savings. Zero. 31% have zero retirement savings. Zero. 41% say they have education-related debt. I thought that was pretty high. 41% have educator-related debt. 41%. That's huge. The one that I found very interesting that, you know, tells you people just don't understand what they're doing with their finances, car buyers. And they didn't give me a percentage of this, but they said many car buyers don't have any plan to pay off their car. They plan on buying a new car before they pay off the old car. What are you thinking? That makes no sense to me. You're never going to pay off your car? Never? That's a debt that's expensive debt. It's not as expensive as credit card debt, but it's expensive debt. Why would you do that? Anyways, those are just some interesting data points. And what do retirees actually do in retirement? While they're in retirement, what are they doing? So there was a survey for that. I love these surveys. Okay, 8% say, well, they're just doing something leisurely. 9% say they're continuing their education. 10% say they're volunteering. 11% say they're traveling. 14% say they're entrepreneurs. They're trying to start a business. 37% say they are continuing to work. That's what the retirees are doing. They retired, but then they went back to work. 37%. Our time is up. I'll be doing these meetings by Skype and phone. Love to talk to you. Just go to InvestTalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab to set up an appointment. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, and for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, I wanted to thank you for listening today, and hopefully we can do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.